Tuesday, April 28th, and what a busy month is April. For many years now, it's been the crescendo month in my life. This was the day of my women's doers luncheon. Unlike many of them, Far leaned heavily on Liz and Bess for their imagination and inventiveness in producing speakers and guest list. I had planned a great deal of this one myself. It was on a subject close to my heart, and it begun when I read a Joe Alsop column about an elementary school teacher in Harlem, Mrs. Kate Tuckman, whose students were from a mighty underprivileged segment of American life, and about her tough and rather gay, really, attack on the massive problem before her. We had arranged to meet her in New York. We liked her. I'd ask her to come down and be our speaker from this luncheon. From the cabinet, I had Margie McNamara because I know that she's interested in education at the very first level. She actually teaches 3 or 4 little Negro boys remedial reading about the same sort of students that Mrs. Tuckman has. And also from the field of education, I had Dr. Regina Hirschfield from the Department of Anthropology at Catholic University, and Mrs. John Jones of Houston, Chairman of the Board of Regents of Texas Woman's University, who had recently given me an honorary degree, and who herself from a vastly different background and to a vastly different constituency is contributing in the world of education. And if it's necessary to classify, I guess I'd put my old friend Wiki, Elizabeth Wickenden Goldschmidt, under education. She's a social welfare consultant now and has been in social welfare since the days of Roosevelt when we first knew her. There was Ellen Proxmire from the Senate and Mrs. William McCullough from the House, a Republican. And what brilliant lights from the world of art. I was very proud to have in this house Marian Anderson, Mrs. Orpheus H. Fisher, and how her husband's first name does delight me. She moves with the most regal dignity in all surroundings. I wonder what's going on in her mind. And there was Maria Tallchief, the famous ballerina, whose private name is Mrs. Henry Paskin, Jr. If I were an artist, I'd like to paint her face. The Tallchief isn't happenstance. She's an Indian. And testimony that this nation of so many mixed blood strains can succeed. And there was Miss Catherine Ann Porter, who wrote Noon Wine and Maria Concepcion, and lately, Ship of Fools. Linda and Wari Lynn lit on her like a duck on a June bug and began to question her about some of their lessons in school, seeking some first-hand information. Who could mind talking about their own work? They loved her, and I hope she enjoyed them. From the world of clubs, so important in this fabric of American life, there was Mrs. E. Lee Osborne, past president of the General Federation of Women's Clubs and longtime Johnson supporter, and Catherine Payden, past president of the National Business and Professional Women's Clubs. I always like to have one governor's wife to these luncheons, and this time it was Mrs. Donna Russell from South Carolina. Young, pretty, in that peculiarly southern way, I was delighted to get to know her. And also from the world of politics, Carmen Warshaw of California, key figure in the political hierarchy of that strangely mixed-up state, and, I believe, a real friend and admirer of Lyndon's. Francis Lewin of the AP was the pool for the press, and from the world of medicine, there was Dr. Ethel Calhoun from the Sister Elizabeth Kinney Center in Pontiac, Michigan. I'm really very flattered that people of caliber would come all that long way for a meeting such as this. And where else but in medicine put Florence Mahoney, my old friend. She's on Lyndon's Committee on Heart, Cancer, and Stroke, and has been, all the years I've known her, an unpaid lobbyist for all sorts of government aid in medical research, friend and associate of Mary Lasker's, and a sort of catalyst who brings people together from various walks of life. So it was a mixed-up group, a real mosaic of American life, and I thought a delightful 2 hours of luncheon and conversation. Lyndon burst in with Dean Rusk and Bob McNamara and introduced them to the ladies. And then Mrs. Tuckman spoke, and very well she did, though too long, really. But it's high time all of us understood more about what goes on behind the bleak front facade of Public School 184 and all of the others like it, because it's going to make our country in the future, or rather be one of the streams that flows into the river that makes it. After the guests left, I had a quick appointment with Norman Rockwell to have my picture made. It's going on the cover of something down the road somewhere. And then at 4:30, Robin Duke came over at my request. So beautiful and elegant and efficient and really kind. She looked at several pieces of fabric that I had brought back from the East, and we decided what I might do with them. A theater suit out of this. A White House gala evening dress out of that. And incidentally, we beat Dear Lucy out of something lovely because we decided that even 17 would be too young for bouquets. Tonight was our black tie dinner for the leaders of business, producing the not unexpected growl from Lyndon that it should be black tie, although I know it makes it a lot more special for the ladies and for everybody, really. We received in the Blue Room the Dillons from Treasury, the McNamara's from Defense, the Hodges from Commerce, the Wirtz's from Labor, and poor overworked Walter Heller, chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, were with us in the company totaling about 134. There were the William Battens of the J.C. Penney Company, which has brought the chain department store to all the little towns I knew in my childhood, even Jefferson, Roger Blau, chairman of U.S. Steel, and what fun to see George and Alice Brown, fresh from the wilds of Argentina, where they'd been fishing, George with a mustache. How constructively and how wisely they have grown into the latter years of life. And there was bluff, hearty Gussie Bush of Anheuser-Busch, and his beautiful, slim, blonde wife, Trudy, mother of 6 children. I'm very glad they could come because they hadn't been able to come to the Earhart dinner at the ranch shortly after Christmas. And the Donald Davids, he's vice chairman of the Ford Foundation, and I would adore to get him off for about a 2-hour talk about what that has done all around the world. I'd love to learn from him. And also from Ford, there was Henry Ford II. And in silly feminine fashion, my mind kept turning to Anne, the wife from whom he's recently divorced, and whom I will meet on May the 7th when she comes to the meeting of Mrs. Kennedy's Committees on Art. And then the Crawford Greenwalds from E.I. DuPont de Nemours and Company, our old friend the Frederick Capples of American Tell and Tale, with our affinity for the telephone. His name always especially rings a bell with me, no pun intended. And the Tom McCabes of Scott Paper Company, we chatted about our mutual friend, Jay Taylor, who sends us every Christmas an innocuous and highly acceptable gift of paper products. There were 2 Rockefellers, David Rockefeller of Chase Manhattan Bank, the James S. Rockefellers of the First National City Bank of New York City, and then the Bob Stevens, formerly in Eisenhower's government, and the Walter Tuies of the C&O Railway Company, whom I met long, who are besides associated with our old place of gaiety, the Greenbrier. I looked at our cabinet members and wondered if they thought they were the most overworked cabinet that ever operated in this town. And I've grown quite fond of Walter Heller, and hear with great dismay that he's going to have to leave us after a while simply because he can't afford to raise his family on government wages. It was really the business power structure of the United States, and a highly interesting company. I hope Lyndon knows how very proud I am of him, because he can meet them on an equal footing and talk to them in tough, respectful, persuasive language. I think they like him. As soon as the shaking hands had been completed, the men went to the East Room for a briefing, with most of the cabinet people participating, but I believe Lyndon being the chief speaker. And I took the ladies upstairs for the usual tour through the second floor and the explanation of all its history, traditions, present furnishings. Then we had dinner at round tables with singing violins coming in with the dessert. And then me receiving a quick little note passed to my outstretched hand under the table by Jack, suggesting I make a toast. So I arose and said, "May I propose a toast on behalf of a grateful nation, to the leaders of business in this generous country who have done so much for so many, and in the doing have made us great. Then we went in the East Room for dancing, with a battalion of handsome young White House aides swarming to the rescue, gracefully taking lady after lady from Lennon's arm, so that, I hope, he got to dance with nearly everybody present. I know he wanted to. How funny that we should do more dancing after 50 than nearly any time in our lives, and I love it. The evening was light and gay for the women, and, I hope, explanatory and probing and impressive for the men. At any rate, that guy, my husband, tries one hell of a lot.